Hi, this is Jill Murphy from Pharmacy Times, and you're listening to Pharmacy Focus. The Pharmacy Times Pharmacy Focus podcast provides the latest industry news and information, thought leader insights, clinical updates, patient counseling tools, and innovative solutions for the everyday practice and business of pharmacy. Before we begin with this week's episode, do you know what drink in the 19th century was created by infusing coca leaves into a bottle of Bordeaux? We will reveal the answer at the end of the episode. In this week's episode, we will be discussing multiple sclerosis, including diagnosis, treatment options, and the role of the pharmacist in patient care with Dr. Tirasham Jiang and pharmacist Dr. Margaret Hansen. Jiang gave an overview of MS and how a neurologist can begin their diagnosis on their patient.
The diagnosis of MS is made primarily by the clinical presentation, and I'll explain what that means, and also MRI scans. And then there are some additional tests that can be helpful in making that diagnosis. So the clinical presentation basically is we take a history from the patient, we listen to them and hear, you know, what happened, you know, what kind of symptoms have you had. Generally, patients will come in with some kind of neurologic event, which is relapsing remitting MS. Most patients come in with an attack. We call it kind of an attack of, you know, acute symptoms that start up all of a sudden. We also do an exam. So we examine our patients to see if there are any abnormalities on the exam that suggest there's damage somewhere in the central nervous system. So that comprises the clinical presentation of the patient. A lot of times we would ask if things have happened in the past that the patient maybe may not have sought medical care or, you know, been cognizant that it could have been an MS event. And then another key component of the diagnosis is imaging. And the basic type, the most common type of imaging that's used is MRI. So we typically would get MRI of the brain and also the spinal cord. And what we're looking for scars. We call these lesions that tell us that there has been some kind of inflammation or some kind of damage to a specific part of the brain or the spinal cord. So we look for very distinct shapes of, you know, these lesions in very specific locations. Most of the time, the clinical presentation and the MRI scan put together can help in making a diagnosis. And the most common criteria that's used today is called the McDonald's criteria for diagnosis. The most recent update was in 2017. Now, sometimes more information is needed and we get other tests. So very common tests that, you know, may be added is a spinal tap. And in the spinal tap, we are looking for markers of inflammation. Basically, you know, the most common test that we would add would be something that's called oligoclonal band and the IgG index. So those are the two components we look for in a spinal tap. There are other tests that we employ sometimes, like the visual evoked potentials and other ancillary tests that could help with that diagnosis. But the most important component is a clinical presentation of a patient and the MRI scan.
On the pharmacist side, Hansen mentioned how she counsels patients and other styles of patient care she deals with as a clinical pharmacist in a neurology clinic.
So patients are referred to meet with me either in person or telehealth visits from their neurologist. And so typically I meet with them when they're maybe newly diagnosed or planning to start or switch their MS medication. And then I also meet with them ongoing for kind of ongoing monitoring of their medication and safety monitoring. So at a new visit with me, I'll often go over the different MS medications that may be good options for the patients. It's a pretty in-depth counseling. We'll talk about how the medications work with MS, what risks there might be, monitoring that we'll do, and of course, any expected side effects with the medication. Additionally, I will make sure that we've got all of our baseline testing done before they would possibly start a new medication and look for any red flags why maybe one medication wouldn't be preferred over another. Additionally, I'll address any kind of family planning considerations or questions they might have, review their immunization history and make recommended vaccine suggestions, and as well as review their medications for any types of interactions and assess their vitamin D level and if they're on an adequate supplement. So it's a pretty involved first visit, but then see patients pretty regularly every 6 months or so to kind of keep an eye on their medication, make sure they're doing okay.
As for new drugs in the pipeline or any new treatment options for patients, Jiyoung emphasized how there are many drugs that she uses for treatment and how there is not a clear path for choosing a drug for a specific patient based on its implications.
So there's a wide variety of drugs. These drugs work in different ways. So there's different mechanisms in which, they help to reduce whether it's an inflammatory activity or help to slow progression in terms of progressive MS phenotypes. In general, we have drugs that, are low efficacy. These are the earlier drugs that we started using for MS, a lot of which are injections. And then we have drugs that are high efficacy, meaning they are highly effective and help to prevent that inflammatory activity to a very great degree and to a much larger scale than the low efficacy drugs. And then we have drugs that are kind of in the middle. If a patient is diagnosed with MS, there isn't a way to know what is the right drug for that patient. A lot of times we talk with the patient, we find out, what are their personal goals? Do they want to have children within the next, few years? How bad is the MS? We have certain markers that can give us an idea of, how a patient is going to progress over time. These are called predictive factors that could tell us, is this a patient that may have more trouble or more disability down the road? So there isn't a clear path for choosing the medication. There are different models of picking a drug. The biggest debate that, we always talk about at our meetings is the escalation approach versus the induction approach. Escalation approach primarily means you start with a lower efficacy drug that is safe. And as the disease evolves, if that drug is not effective enough, you escalate in a stepwise manner to a more effective drug that may be a little bit riskier than the low efficacy drug. And then in the induction model is completely opposite. You start early with the most effective drug because the disease is most active at the time of the diagnosis. And so you start very early with a very highly effective or potent medication. These drugs may be slightly riskier than, the low efficacy drugs, but, later on as the disease inflammatory activity quiets down, you could de-escalate to a drug that maybe isn't as risky, but not as effective. So there are different models of therapy. There isn't one that is right or wrong. I know there are studies right now that are going on that are trying to answer that question, at least two different studies funded by PCORI that are trying to answer that question about what is the most effective way of starting a disease-modifying therapy on an MS patient.
We are taking a short break to celebrate pharmacy hero Jessica Louie, founder of Spark Joy in Healthcare. Louie started organizing care packages for pharmacists and their team members at the beginning of the COVID-19 pandemic, and she has sent packages to more than 800 pharmacists and healthcare professionals. Each package includes a thank you note, affirmation cards, notepads, snacks, and personal care items. If you would like to nominate a pharmacist or pharmacy staff member as a pharmacy hero, email the address in our description with your nominee. Now back to the show. In terms of the pharmacist's role in helping patients with MS and how that may change in the future, Hansen said that as more treatment options broaden for patients, it is important to have a pharmacist involved from the start.
So there are additional medications that keep getting kind of added to our MS armamentarium. And so as those options broaden for patients, I think it's important to have a pharmacist involved to be able to go over those medications in detail with the patient, answer any questions that they have, and make sure that it's a safe medication for them to get started on. So yes, I see the pharmacist involvement only expanding, and pharmacists are involved kind of throughout the continuum of where they receive care, from the specialty pharmacies that dispense their medications or the infusion centers, or even in the clinics where I am. Pharmacists are involved in kind of providing that education and that oversight throughout that process.
Jiang hopes that the stigma surrounding MS can be brought to light, with a lot of patients keeping their diagnosis to themselves due to others' perceptions.
And the other thing too is it's going to maybe help with the stigma that comes with having a disabling neurologic disease. A lot of my patients tell me, you know, I haven't told anybody that I have MS because, you know, I'm afraid I might lose my job. I have a lot of patients that need to use a cane and will refuse to use that cane because, you know, it's an outward sign that they have some kind of a disorder, you know, and that to some degrees is stigmatizing. And, you know, there's that feeling of I'm different from other people. And so I think, you know, things like this help to raise awareness and help us to just see that, you know, we're all people, and you know, people come in with different issues and different problems, and you know, anybody could get MS, you know. And you know, if you have MS, it's not something to be ashamed of. It's not something that you have to keep a secret. I mean, I don't advocate to announce, you know, that, you know, you have you don't have to announce your medical conditions, but you know, I think we don't have to live in fear of disclosing the fact that, you know, there's a potential neurologic disorder that may cause symptoms and may cause disability. Because I think ultimately, if a patient is comfortable to share what they have, then they can get those accommodations they need at work. Then they can, you know, they can integrate a lot better into society if this is something that they feel that they don't have to keep as a secret. So I think, you know, things like this help to raise a lot of awareness and just help to help the community to see that, you know, these are normal people. You know, it's everybody can get it, and we all have to work at accepting people and just giving people the help that they need.
Hansen added that there are a lot of silent symptoms that can occur from MS, which she hopes patients and providers can become more aware of when working on a diagnosis.
You know, MS can affect you kind of from head to toe, and it's not all visible. So I think there are a lot of kind of silent symptoms that people can have, such as fatigue or, you know, maybe difficulty concentrating, that, you know, hopefully this does allow people to advocate for themselves and sort of seek things that can help make improvements in those aspects of their lives, because it's not just all about your walking and how it affects your leg strength. It really is a wide array of symptoms that can be related to somebody's MS. And hopefully this does help with acceptance on a personal level and more as a population of, you know, what we can do to help and accommodate people. Because like Dr. Yang said, they really are normal people able to live capable lives. But sometimes some adjustments do need to be made, and that's okay.
Did you figure out our fun fact of the week? The drink from the 19th century that was created by infusing coca leaves was Vin Mariani. In the 19th century, a French chemist named Angelo Mariani created a wine tonic that fortifies and refreshes body and brain, which he dubbed Vin Mariani. Mariani made the concoction by dumping coca leaves into a nice bottle of Bordeaux. And to his delight, the tonic that emerged provided quite an enjoyable effect. The drink, containing 10% alcohol and 8% cocaine, was a huge hit. Used to promote general health and wellness, it was particularly enjoyed and endorsed by writers such as Arthur Conan Doyle, Jules Verne, Alexander Dumas, Henrik Ibsen, and Robert Louis Stevenson. Thomas Edison was also a fan of the drink, noting its ability to help him stay awake and clear-headed while working on projects throughout the night. Since Edison was suspected to sleep only 4 hours each night, Vin Mariani may have had a role to play in his ability to keep alert. Thanks for listening to Pharmacy Focus. Stay tuned for next episode, where we will be joined by another key opinion leader in the pharmacy space.